Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. December 28, 2021. What is the program of life? Question: what is the real program of life? Answer: the program of life is to enable every level to develop and reach a higher level. This is what happens from one state to another on the spiritual ladder until we reach the level of Adam, the human level, that resembles the upper force. The animate level doesn't change in its essence, it remains the animate level, but it develops a form that is similar to the upper force, which is called Adam. This means that a person doesn't become like the upper force, like the Creator, but with regard to the levels of still, vegetative, and animate nature, he becomes a partner of the upper force. We cannot reach a level above the level of Adam. What happens with us, happens above the still, vegetative, and animate levels, which means a change of intention but not of our actual nature. Question: can we say that in our current state we humans are but biological robots? Answer: we are biological robots. We are not different from other animals at all. We live by our instincts, desires, and thoughts, just like them. Only if we receive the power of bestowal from above and use it, will we become similar to the force of bestowal that is totally external to us, and detached from us. It is like looking at a mirror and seeing something similar to you, which is why we are called Adam, from the Hebrew word Edame, to resemble the upper force. But it is already a totally different nature. This nature can be clothed in us, to some degree, and can enable us to function like the upper force, above our egoistic desires. It is only a replica, like a reflection in a mirror, which is why we are called Adam, yet we remain like the animate level in this world with the ability to acquire additional upper force, to bestow, to connect, to be above our nature, above our ego. From CAB TV's Conversation with Journalists, December 2, 2021. My new article on LinkedIn, From the Nadir to the Zenith in 2022. 2021 has been a tumultuous year. COVID-19 is still raging with recurring waves. The summer saw unprecedented fires in numerous places around the world alongside equally unprecedented floods, and earthquakes and volcanic eruptions seem to have been more frequent this year than in most other years. Meanwhile, international tensions escalated between the US and China, the US and Russia, Europe and Russia, and tensions over Taiwan, the South China Sea, and in Syria have risen to near military clashes. To make matters worse, the global economy was hampered by a severe shortage of computer chips, and supply chains around the world have been disrupted by recurring lockdowns. Surprisingly, there is a relatively easy way to reverse the negative trajectory. We can rise from the nadir to the zenith much faster than we can imagine if we commit to just one thing. Though it is harder to do than it seems at first glance, we need to relate to everything that happens as an incentive to bring us closer to each other. If we change our approach to everything that happens to us and around us, we will see how life takes us on a pleasant stream toward bliss. Why did I say that it is only relatively easy? Our ego gets in the way. It does not let us come close to one another. The ego is the reason people are alienated from each other, and it will not give up its control over our hearts without a fight. We can defeat our ego, but we cannot do it by ourselves. To achieve this, we must use two instruments: our social environment and our intellect. The intellect is the easier one to use. Currently, we are oblivious to the consequences of our actions. Some of us are conscious of the environmental price we pay for our wrongdoing, but very few are aware that we are connected not only on the biological level, but also on the emotional and mental levels just as much as on the physical level. Just as mistreatment of our physical environment is detrimental to all of us, mistreatment of our social environment has, at least, equally detrimental consequences. Now that people are aware of the need to preserve the physical environment, it is time to become aware of the need to cultivate positive social environments. Just as we are dependent on each other for the water we drink and the food we eat, we are dependent on each other for the words we say and the thoughts we think, which in turn affect our mental and emotional condition. To become aware of our social interdependence, we must change our entire environment. We cannot expect people to think that consideration is good when the idols that the media promotes are self-centered and promote only their own image. At school, on social media, and on every means of mass communication, we must promote pro-social values. If we learn to value those who promote solidarity and mutual consideration, our communities will look very different from how they do today. We want to curb gun violence, drug abuse, and social ills, but instead of curing society, we are only fighting the symptoms. We can heal the society by bringing people together rather than keeping them a random collection of alienated and distrustful individuals. If we work on this, we will not need to tackle each symptom separately since they will disappear without the cause that generates them. We can do it this year, but we must understand that we have no other choice, and we must support each other in the process. Otherwise, we may not have the necessary determination. Medium published my new article, A Very Short Summary of 2021. As we approach the end of 2021, everyone is drawing conclusions about the past year and guessing what 2022 will bring. From my perspective, 2021 has been a good year, a year of learning, and learning is definitely good. It may not have been pleasant, but that does not mean I do not appreciate what we, as humanity, have been receiving. The main lesson we learned this year has been that nature is the sovereign, and we are its subjects. This is a priceless lesson because if we remember this, we will avoid future mistakes that could cost us countless lives and horrible disasters. Another good lesson from 2021 is that the world powers must put their mutual relationships in order if they want to avoid conflicts that can escalate to an all-out war. Clearly, there is a difference between what governments want and what reality dictates, but I think they learned the lesson, and it is good to see that even the Russian and Chinese governments have learned. The collisions between Russia and America, Russia and Europe, and specifically, NATO and Russia, clarify many things. In the end, they will bring them closer to peace, or at least to a truce. China, too, will understand that it has no chance to continue its development if it sides with Russia. Economically, there is no question that its future depends on the US. If the US would even slightly limit its purchases in China, it would rattle China to the core. They have nowhere to sell but to America. I don't mind what people say or what newspapers write, I mind only numbers. Over the past year, and even before, the US has been giving huge sums of money to its people as rescue packages to assist them through COVID. China needs Americans to spend that money on Chinese goods in order to keep its own economy afloat. If Americans stop purchasing from China, the giant from the East will fall. As for Israel, I am sorry to say that I do not think we learned a lot from this year's experiences. To improve, we will need more lessons, and they will not be easy. We have no idea who are our friends and who are our enemies. Worse yet, we have not learned how to correct ourselves. We have a lot more work ahead of us. I think that one of the biggest problems of Israel is that there are entities within the country that dream of the abolishment of Israel and work hard to achieve it. We are not as assertive as anyone should be toward one's enemies, and I think that these issues will hurt us. While the world is learning to put relationships in order, as I wrote above, Israel is not learning anything. We are creating an internal chaos. However, it is clear why Israel is not learning while the rest of the world is learning well. Israel needs to develop in its own direction. The rest of the world is learning how to function according to people's natural egoism. Israel, on the other hand, should develop in the opposite direction. It should evolve toward connection and care among everyone, and set an example of how people can rise above their egoism and form a united, cohesive society based on solidarity rather than on alienation and competition. Regrettably, Israelis do not want to hear a word about connection or unity, much less live them out. We will reject connection with fellow Israelis for as long as we can until, perhaps, it is too late to save the country from disintegration. We are already close to the edge. As for the virus, it is here and will stay, as I have been saying from the very beginning. However, it seems as though we are learning how to deal with it, how to live alongside the virus. Gradually, the virus will teach us what we should and should not do in life. This is why I hope it does not go away, at least not until it teaches us to take only what we need and dedicate our time and efforts to building supportive human relations rather than waste our efforts on destructive consumption. Medium published my new article, "The World Would Be Better Off Without the Giving Pledge." The Giving Pledge, according to the statement on the site, is a promise by the world's wealthiest individuals and families to dedicate the majority of their wealth to charitable causes. In 2010, Warren Buffett, Melinda Gates, and Bill Gates founded the Giving Pledge initiative after a series of conversations with philanthropists about how they could set a new standard of generosity among the ultra-rich. The Giving Pledge aims to address some of society's most pressing problems. The 231 billionaires who have signed the pledge include names like David Rockefeller, Jeff and Mary Rothschild, Richard Branson, Charles Bronfman, Elon Musk, Mackenzie Scott, Mark Zuckerberg, and of course the three initiators. Many of these people have already donated billions of dollars, but the world continues to deteriorate. I am afraid that even if all the people on the list follow through on their promises, the world will not be one bit better than it is today. They will scatter their wealth across the globe, build a hospital wing here, a new school there, but people's lives will not really improve. It is true that in many places, the health and education systems need to be improved, but pouring money into sick systems will not cure them. If anything, it will only worsen the disease. As it stands, the world would be better off without those billions. The dysfunctional welfare, healthcare, and education systems that we see all over the world are in this state not for lack of money, but for lack of goodwill. There is no desire to make them work well because people do not care for one another. When people want to exploit each other, they take pleasure in seeing others suffer and have no interest in improving anyone's life. When you pour that much money into a system that is so corrupt, there is not a shred of doubt that the funds will stay with those already at the top, and none of it will trickle down to those who need it. Money can be put to good use if people want to put it to good use. To prevent billions, if not trillions of dollars from entrenching corruption even deeper and remaining in the hands of corrupt bureaucrats, all of society must go through a comprehensive educational process. When people learn to care for one another, they will naturally use whatever resources they have for everyone's benefit. When this happens, we will find that we can have excellent health and great education for a fraction of the cost that people now consider necessary. To achieve this, we need an educational process. Indeed, the only education that we need is to learn to care for one another. To achieve such a mindset, we must approach the issue from all angles. Science proves that only systems whose parts collaborate and maintain the overall health of all their elements survive and even thrive. History also proves that societies where solidarity and cohesion were strong thrived, and that they fell apart when internal divisions took over. We need to show in every way that we are only strong, healthy, and happy when we are united, when we care for one another. In the coming years, hundreds of millions of people will remain jobless. The pandemic is accelerating this process, and already, tens of millions are out of work either voluntarily or because their pre-pandemic jobs have disappeared. How are they to support themselves and their families if there is no mutual responsibility among us? How will they stay sane if they do not feel that society cares about them, and that they are obligated to society? They will become rogue individuals ready to explode and do harm at any moment. However, if their minds are set on solidarity, if they understand and feel that we are all dependent on each other, and that society will care for them, they will find constructive ways to contribute, and society will benefit from them. The longer the pandemic continues to wreak havoc in society, the more urgently we need to teach ourselves the rules of the new, emergent world and how to operate in it. Only when we understand how the rules of the game have changed, we will know what to do with the billions of dollars in donations. Then we will also realize that we do not need people to give their money to society, but to give it their hearts. Michael Leitman, on Quora, what is a spiritual journey like? We have the ability to rise to a level where we can see the origin of our experiences and observe life from a different vantage point. What is this new perspective we can reach? It is one where we attribute much less importance to our corporeal experiences and relate solely to the true spiritual world. When we attain the upper spiritual world, then our world, which we build out of various unreal experiences, where we are impressed by nonsense inflated by imaginations and delusions, no longer impresses us. The spiritual world is a sensation of a single force of love and bestowal above our corporeal sensation, and its attainment means letting our soul guide our spiritual life. When we are guided by our soul, we go through an opening to a state where we mutually complement each other in an eternal and perfect life, adhering with the upper spiritual force of love, bestowal and connection. We then become boundless, rising above the limits of our corporeal sensation of reality. The ultimate experience we aspire to reach is spiritual revelation, which is known as the revelation of the Creator or the revelation of the upper force in the wisdom of Kabbalah. The Creator is the source of reality, the source of our experiences and fate. Through the aspiration to discover and feel such a force, we eventually reach the attainment of life's source. Based on the video, Spirituality, A Journey Above Human Limits, with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman and Aaron Levi. Elixir of Youth, A Gift or a Curse? In the news, Daily Mail, is this pink pill the elixir of youth? A Harvard scientist claims NMN drug has already knocked 20 years off his age. Professor Sinclair, one of the world's leading experts on the science of aging, believes it is the key to not only warding off the process of human aging but even reversing it. Experiments on mice by Professor Sinclair and his team showed that after just a week of being fed NMN dissolved in their drinking water, the cells of aging mice were indistinguishable from those of young mice. Their muscles looked and behaved like those of a young mouse, too. This is the closest we are to a safe and effective anti-aging drug that's perhaps only 3 to 5 years from being on the market if the trials go well. Comment: imagine, such a bottle of rejuvenation of 20 to 40 years will be sold. My response: and what will it give me? To go play children's games with today's mind and experience? It will be some kind of unhealthy condition. I wouldn't buy it and wouldn't even take such a bottle for free. I think it's a curse, not a gift. I want to live a normal life and make the most of my years, in order to leave a mark in people so that they wouldn't want to go back, but will want to leap forward. Question: you said, leap, which means, in principle, feeling young if they move like that. Answer: yes. That's when, I think, if I can make some quick corrections in myself, I need more strength, not physical, but internal. But it's impossible, it's against the laws of nature too. But in general, if you imagine such a thing, then only go forward. Question: and if you were told, we can give you strength, what would you use it on? Answer: only to make such a wonderful transformation. Not to become young and not old, nothing like that. I just want to make a correction within myself as if I had lived another 20 years. Question: correction of what? Answer: my egoism, my nature. To get even closer to love, to bestowal, to connection with people, and to the Creator together with them. That's when it would be a really serious mission. Question: is that the only reason a person needs strength? Answer: just for that. Question: and this is called youth? Answer: this is a real inspiration, relaxation. This is real life. Harvard does not understand anything about this, it does not understand and will not help. Question: and the science that you are engaged in, Kabbalah? Answer: Kabbalah cannot help you make a leap forward, it is also against the forces of nature. We fantasize about this topic here. But it carries a person forward. Back, he understands that this is against the flow of nature and there is nothing good about it. If I suddenly find myself with my thoughts, today's views 20 years, 30 years ago, and what do? Is it like the Yankee at King Arthur's court? Can you imagine if you were to turn up today 200 years ago? Question: with all your current knowledge? Answer: yes. Even among the smartest people of that time. Question: is this what you call a curse? Answer: yes. Question: so I wouldn't be able to exist there? Answer: you have no one to talk to. Question: and it must be a complete concurrence, my wisdom, which I have acquired, and my gray hair. Answer: yes. Now you understand how Kabbalists live. Even today they lock themselves in and live within themselves. And what is needed is only to teach others if they want to. And that's it. From Cab TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, October 18, 2021. Sodom, a ban on communication between people. Comment: when a person hears the phrase Sodom and Gomorrah, he associates it with some kind of sexual perversion. And in the Talmud, which was written in the 3rd century, it is said that the cities were destroyed due to spiritual malice, hatred of strangers, and lack of hospitality. My response: yes, that is how it manifested. You have no right to receive someone as a guest, give something, help with something, direct, or advise. At any level of communication, you do not interact with other people because you are not going to help them in anything and get anything from them. This condition acts reciprocally, in both directions: you are not for me and I am not for you. Comment: but today in our world there is also such hostility towards strangers. My response: this enmity does not limit you and does not force you to put an obstacle in contacting others. And here, there is a complete ban on any kind of communication between people except within a clan or family. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, December 7, 2021. If there were a possibility to perform miracles. Question: if you had the ability to perform miracles, how would you use it? Answer: I would sit still and be silent. Question: so you would not perform miracles? Why? Answer: the world does not need them. Comment: but it could prove your method is correct. My response: no one could correctly implement it then. Question: so miracles are harmful for human development? Answer: yes. Otherwise, it could be such a theater here, but in the end, no one would be better off and there would be several more religions. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, November 30, 2021. Luck and a miracle. Question: Kabbalah is about attaining the Creator in this world. Is the revelation of the Creator to man a miracle or a law of nature? Answer: it is a law, but when it is revealed it happens unexpectedly and is perceived as a miracle. It appears in a person as a feeling of new natural inner qualities. Question: let's say a person used to think about himself and he suddenly starts thinking and caring about others. Does he see this as some kind of miracle? Answer: yes. Something happens to him that did not happen before. He understands that it comes from a higher level of perceiving the world, and he calls it a miracle. Question: is there a connection between luck and a miracle? You often say that in order for a miracle, the revelation of the Creator, to happen, there must be luck. Answer: luck is when a person has the correct direction toward his future. And if he consistently follows it, then a miracle happens. Question: so, should there also be luck? Answer: yes. There must be luck. Good luck to you, and a miracle. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, November 30th, 2021. Hatred is an opportunity to show love. Question: how should we respond when someone attacks us, shouts at us, accuses us, and makes us feel very bad? Answer: this can be seen as an opportunity to connect with this person in a beautiful, higher, more corrected, and complete manner. Question: is hatred an opportunity? Answer: hatred is an opportunity to show the other side, love. Question: do we reach this through correct education or only through spiritual attainment? Answer: through education and many exercises. From Cab TV's Conversation with Journalists, December 2nd, 2021.